Okay, we begin here on the top of Mem Vav Amud Aleph. We are continuing the sugya from yesterday, 11 lines down. Rav Papa yesterday proposed the possibility that even according to the one who says, in matbea naseh chalipin, money, coinage cannot be used as the sudar in the kinyan sudar. Nevertheless, they can be the object of a kinyan sudar, that you can successfully acquire money through a kinyan sudar. So even though there's a machloket about the ability to utilize coins as the sudar, but as far as acquiring the coins or acquiring money, they could be the object of a kinyan sudar. Gemara brought a mishnah that seemed to indicate otherwise, and now the Gemara concluded, and that's what we left off with yesterday, ein matbea nikne b'chalipin, that you're unable to acquire a matbea through chalipin, shmamina. Now the Gemara says, v'af Rav Papa hadarbe, and Rav Papa himself reversed this opinion and did not in the end believe that you can acquire money through a kinyan chalipin. Kehad Rav Papa, because we had an incident with Rav Papa, which we actually saw back in Baba Kama. Habulei tresar alfei dinari bechuzai. He had 12,000 dinarim. The way that our Gemara reads is that they were deposited by bechuzai. In the other Gemaras, it looks like mesik bechuzai, which means that he had lent them money. He was a creditor to them. Over here, it's described as a pikadon rather than a loan. Akninu the Rav Shmuel Bar Acha. He gave over the rights of ownership to Rav Shmuel Bar Acha. Agav asefa debete. With or through either the threshold of his house or the back of his house. A kinyan agav. Can generate a kinyan for metaltalin through a kinyan agav. A kinyan agav is where you give real property, and with the real property, you also give metaltalin. From the Mishnah in Kiddushin, which is that the property or underlying real estate allows you to acquire metaltalin along with it. So karka, you can acquire either through kesef shtar and chazaka. So through that means, or by gifting it to him, that area, agav, the karka, he can give him also the metaltalin, even though they're not present there. The Gemara in Kiddushin discuss whether it has to be literally on the karka, does it have to be stacked on the karka, has all the rules of a kinyan agav. So now, what he was trying to do, and that's what the Gemara in Baba Kama describes, is empower the shliach to collect on his behalf. Because the loveh, if you go with the other girsaot, that they were a debtor, or even here, if he is the shomer, is going to be unwilling to give the item to the shliach in these cases because he is responsible for the money until it reaches back to the original baal. Even though there's a shliach over here, it's not classified or considered as if it's gotten back to the original owner until it reaches him. So the loveh or the shomer here does not want to take the risk of sending it back through the shliach because he's on the hook for it till it reaches the owner. So the only way for that to work is for Rav Papa to empower the shliach to be the owner. And therefore, when the shomer or the loveh gives it to him, it's as if it's done, and he's off the hook at that moment. So what Rav Papa did was empower Rav Shmuel Bar Acha, who was going there anyway, to be, quote-unquote, the owner of the money. And therefore, then he could be the collector, and the loveh or the shomer would be willing to give it over to him, because they are no longer then bound by the risks that something could happen on the way. Kiato, when Rav Shmuel Bar Acha came back, nofach da'ape ad tavach. Rav Papa went out to greet him until tavach. Rashi over here says tavach is a makom, it's a place. And he was so excited about the fact that he got his money back that he went out to greet him. And you can see here in the Rabbeinu Chanano, he says, perish, tavach shem makom, it's the name of a place. Mifurash besechet nida. And in nida, the Gemara explains, ta'azara papa the tavach. But papa went out to tavach, lamar, leka tzurmi mirabonon ocha, delikubinu lape. Is there any tzurmi rabonon here that I can go visit, that I can go see? And the chulei v'chulei. So you see that Rav Papa was actually in Tavach or had visited Tavach. He was looking for Talmidei Chachamim over there. Rashi in Baba Kama, the Rashbam in Baba Batra brings another interpretation, which means Ad Tavach means Ad Chatzi Aderech. He met him halfway. Rashi in Baba Kama says he met him halfway because he was afraid that he was going to keep the money for himself. He had empowered him or give him the right to collect the money on his behalf. He's afraid that he's going to keep the money now. So he went out to grab the money or take it back so that he wouldn't keep the money. So that's why he went out to meet him halfway. The Rashbam in Baba Batra rejects that and says there are people who explain that and it's wrong. Because he did not empower him in the sense of ownership. He empowered him in the sense of shlichut, in that he made him into his agent, but he empowered him in a way that made him like an owner-agent. But in the end, he still was acting on behalf of Rav Papa. And there's no way that Rav Shmuel Bar Acha could have kept the monies over here. So Rashbam rejects that explanation of Rashi and Baba Kama, but that is the alternate explanation of what Tavach is. That's the description. Now, why is that helpful in our case? It's because how did Rav Papa grant the ownership over to Rav Shmuel Bar Acha? He did it in a Kinyan Agav. Had it been that he could have done it through a Kinyan Sudar, that's a much simpler type of Kinyan, because then he doesn't have to grant him ownership of his threshold or ownership of the back of his house in order to do a Kinyan Agav. Kinyan Sudar, you simply do it as a representative Kinyan, and then he could have given over the rights to the money to Rav Shmuel Bar Acha through a Kinyan Sudar. Why did he not execute like that? The Gemara's assumption is that Rav Papa Hadarbe, that Rav Papa reversed his opinion, and even though he says here in our Gemara, even though you can't utilize the Matbeya to create a Kinyan Sudar, you could acquire it through a Kinyan Sudar, but over here, based on what we're seeing now from this case, Rav Papa did not utilize the Kinyan Sudar in order to grant the rights to Rav Shmuel Bar Acha, which shows that he now believes not only can you not utilize this Matbeya to be the Kinyan Sudar, it also cannot be acquired through a Kinyan Sudar. We're not going to deal with it now, but there are questions as to whether Rav Papa really could have used the Kinyan Sudar over here. If it's a Pikadon, it's a little easier to say that he could have used the Kinyan Sudar to acquire it, because then it's his, in the possession of the Shomer, and then he's granting him the rights of collection or the right to be the owner of that Pikadon, which is fine. But if you say that it was a loan, it's much harder to acquire or give over a loan through a Kinyan Sudar. That has to do with the ability of individuals to transact in credit. The Gemara in Kiddushin discussed it, whether otiot niknot bimisira, can you give over a document of credit to another party? Can you sell them the right of collection? And we've seen both in Kiddushin and Baba Kama, the ability of the original creditor to forgive the loan even after he has sold it. And it's not clear how exactly that functions or works. And it would be even more complex when you add in a Kinyan Sudar, which is a representative Kinyan. So here in the Gemara, it's not really a question because the description of the case is a Pikadon, which is much simpler. But if it was like the Gemara in Baba Kama, that it was a loan, then it would be much harder to grant rights through a Kinyan Sudar through Rav Shmuel Bar Acha, to be aware of that fact. Then the Gemara says, V'chein Amar Ula, Usa Ula also believes, Ein Matbeya Nase Chalipin, that a coin cannot be used as a Kinyan Sudar. Rashi says when it says V'chein over here, it's going back on the machloket of Rav and Levi. So Rav and Levi had a machloket, and now here you have a list of Amoraim that side with whomever is the author of the position, Ein Matbeya Nase Chalipin. V'chein Amar Ravasi, Ein Matbeya Nase Chalipin. V'chein Amar Rav Achan, Amar Rav Yochanan, Ein Matbeya Nase Chalipin. So you have a lineup of Amoraim here that all believe that a coin cannot be utilized in the process of a Kinyan Sudar. It cannot be the Sudar of the Kinyan Chalipin. Tosafot says over here, from this you would conclude also that you cannot acquire something through Chalipin. Why did the Gemara wait until this point in time? Because the Mishnah that we quoted actually proves both points, which is that if you believe that Matbeya Nase Chalipin, if you believe that a coin can be used for Chalipin, then you certainly believe that it can be the object of a Kinyan Chalipin. Because that's Rav Papa's statement from before. Rav Papa said, even according to the one who said that, in Matbeya Zeh Chalipin, still you would be able to acquire it through a Kinyan Chalipin. The Gemara reject that because the Mishnah shows that they didn't use a Kinyan Chalipin over there. They didn't use the Kinyan Chalipin to acquire coins. So now if you have a Mishnah that tells you that you can't acquire coins through Chalipin, that certainly means, or the kal v'chomer, then ain matbeya nase chalipin. And that's why Tosafot says the Gemara waited until now to bring the position of all these Amoraim. Because all of these Amoraim basically are following what the Mishnah says, which is, matbeya cannot be the object of a Kinyan Sudar. Well, if it can't be an object of a Sudar, kol shekein, it can't be the Sudar itself. And therefore, the conclusion from this Mishnah is both that you can't acquire something through Chalipin, you can't acquire a Matbeya through Chalipin, but you also can't make a Kinyan Sudar. You can't use it as the Sudar in a Kinyan Chalipin. That's the conclusion of the Gemara. Now, according to Rashi, that is less simple because of the before said that the reason Ein matbe'a nasali chilipin is because we were worried about the tzura. Rashi claims the reason or the problem is that a tzura doesn't last long, and therefore it's not considered to be a dover misuyam vishalem. So that's something that has duration and is complete or whole. And for that reason, it fails in the kinyan sudar. But that's unique to ein matbe'a nasali chilipin. That's unique to the instance where the coin is being used as the sudar in the kinyan sudar. But that would have no meaning or bearing on the case where you're trying to acquire money through a kinyan sudar. So according to Rashi, you could see or you could come to the conclusion that the two issues have nothing to do with each other. One is a particular din within chalipin, which is the sudar itself has to be a davar shalem misuyam, and a coin fails in that manner. On the other hand, when it comes to acquiring the object through a kinyan chalipin, that might be a different failure, or that might be for a different reason that we don't allow it. So then just because you know one doesn't mean that you know the information about the other. There's no koshikane here according to Rashi. The alternate explanation that we said over there was that the problem with the tzura is that the person's focus is on the tzura and not on the coin. I mean that they're focused on the image, not the tangible value or the underlying value of the object. And so basically what you're doing is you're using an intangible object, which is problematic. There you could understand why the two are connected. Because a kinyan chalipin, you can't use the coin as the sudar because it's an intangible object. But it also would explain why you can't acquire coins through a kinyan sudar, because you're trying to acquire an intangible item. And a kinyan sudar does not work to acquire intangible items. A kinyan sudar works to acquire davar that has mamashut, that is a tangible item. And so therefore the two would be correlated, and that would help explain Tosafot's position here, which is that the kosher cane that he is saying is premised on the fact that the reasoning behind why you can't acquire coins through a kinyan chalipin would be the same reason why a coin itself can't be used as the chalipin, as the sudar, is because of this problem that they focus on the tzura, makes it an intangible item. And therefore Tosafot would come to the conclusion that there's a kosher cane here, where Rashi would not necessarily come to that conclusion because of his different explanation of what the meaning of tzura is. Etave, Rabbi Abba, the Ula. So Rabbi Abba now challenges Ula. Ula just told us, Ein matbe'a nasei chalipin. Rabbi Abba challenges Ula, Hayrei shayu chamarav upo'alav tovimoto. An instance or a case where his donkey drivers, his workers, are bothering him to get paid. They've been working for him. They're ready for their salaries. They want to get their wages. So he says to the money changer that's there, Tainli bidinar ma'ot. Give me a, seems like a dinar worth of ma'ot. Ma'ot in general would be copper coins. Ve'afar nesayim. And I will provide their wages. I will provide for them. Vani alelecha. And I will return to you yafed dinar vitrisit. And I'll give back to you a dinar and a trisit mima'ot sheyeshli bebeiti, from the monies that I have in my house, or similarly the copper coins that I have in my house. So now, this looks like your classic case of interest, which is, he's saying to the Shulchani, I have no money on me right now, lend me the money to pay off my workers, and when I get home, I'm going to give you a dinar plus a trisit, which would in essence be the interest that he owes him for lending him the money. So clearly that is problematic, and that's what the Gemara says now. Im yesh lo ma'ot, mutar. If he has money in the house, then it works. V'im lav, asur. But if not, it would not work. Now, the reason being, the way Rashi explains the difference is, if he has money in his house, and the reason that he is doing this is because it's a matter of convenience, so therefore he's willing to pay him, we'll call it a service fee, in order to provide that convenience or that assistance over here. And the way Rashi describes it, umachmat dochako, because of the pressure that he's under, ozil gabe latet lo trisit yoter. He's willing to pay him a little more. Vein kan mishum ribit, that is not interest. Shari ein kan schar hamtana. There's no payment for the delay of repayment. The basic reason that you pay interest is because someone has lent you money, and your right to repay it at a later date is why you have to pay for that privilege of paying it back later or the usage of the money in the interim. So that's called interest, or what's called agar natar. We're going to see this in the Gemara later on. Or schar hamtana, the payment for delaying the necessity for the repayment. So Rashi says, that's only in a case where the person's delaying the repayment. Over here, he has the money. he has the money on hand, not literally on hand, but he has it in his house, then he doesn't need any delay of the repayment. He simply needs someone to provide him a convenience over here, which is he's have all these people hounding him in the shuk, and he wants to get them off his back. So he just asks the guy a favor, can you just pay them now, and then I'll just get the money and give it to you. So there's no real schar hamtana. It's a matter of convenience. And because of that convenience, he pays him a service fee. So that's the way Rashi describes it, that the tresit can either be a service fee or it can be interest. The circumstances will determine which it is, whether it's agar natar, whether it is schar hamtana, you're paying for the delayed ability to repay, which then would be interest, or you're paying a service fee for the convenience of having someone help you out when you're in a difficult bind or situation. So now, what the Gemara says over here is, Isak adatcha, ein matbea nase chalipin. If you believe that a matbea cannot be made into chalipin, or the way Rashi has it is, nikne bechalipin. That's a big difference here. In matbea nase chalipin, Rashi says, ein nikne bechalipin. Havile halva'a. Then it becomes a loan, v'asur. And it would not be permitted. If he does not have the coins in the house, it's clear that we have a problem here, because then he can't repay it till a later date, and clearly he's paying the tresit for the delay of repayment, or in essence, he's paying interest. If he has it in his house, then it only works if, at the moment that he got the money from the shulchani, then the money in his house transferred over to the shulchani's possession. Or in essence, they're doing a barter transaction or a swap. I'm going to take the shulchani's money in the shuk, and in exchange for that, he's going to take the money that I have in the house. So if you say that a kinyan sudar can work for money, then over here, the way or the means by which the shulchani acquires that which is in his house is through a kinyan sudar or kinyan chalipin. Over here, it won't be a sudar, it'll be an exchange. He'll give him monies here, and then that exchange or that barter will allow the monies in the house to become the shulchani's. And therefore, right away, he's paid him, and there's no schar hamtana. On the other hand, if you believe that you can't, ein matbea nase chalipin, you can't, or ein matbea nikne bechalipin, then you have a problem, because then there is no means of ownership granted the shulchani, and that makes it into a halva'a, that makes it into a loan. Because if the shulchani doesn't get his money right away, then in essence, it is a loan, because you have to wait to get the money back. As Rashi knows over here, Iamart ein matbea nikne bechalipin, but ein nikne bechalipin, vein matbea nase chalipin, and then he adds on, it's not made. Afilo yesh lo nami, even if he has the money, ein konim lo b'makom sheim sham. The shulchani does not get the possession of them right away. Vein zu ela halva'a. And that makes it into a loan. Afagav, the derech mecha chumem karhu. Even though it's done as a sale or a business transaction, it's still, in the end, an effective loan, which is what you're asking. If you have the money in the house, why does it make a difference? Because you can't get the money accessible to him immediately. Since you can't get it to him immediately, there is a schar hamtana, or it becomes a halva'a. If it's a transaction, you need him to have possession of the item. The only way to generate his possession of your money in your house is through a chalipin, a kinyan chalipin over here. And so therefore, Gemara concludes, or Rabbi Ava suggests over here, that this is a problem for Ula's position, that ein matbea nase chalipin, because of the fact that over here you see that the matbea is acquired through a chalipin. So Rashi says over here, the reason that you conclude from here that both matbea nikne bechalipin, matbea nase chalipin, is because money is being used on both sides of the transaction, which is that the shulchani is giving him money. So that is the object that is being used as the kinyan sudar, and the object of the kinyan is the money in the house that is left over there. So since money is being used in both sides of the transaction, that would show you that both matbea nase chalipin, and it would show you that matbea nikne bechalipin, it would show you both things. For the Balei Tosafot, you don't have to do that because automatically the two are connected, which is that if you can use a matbea as a kinyan chalipin, then you would certainly be able to acquire a matbea through a kinyan chalipin, and vice versa, which is that if you cannot acquire an item through a kinyan chalipin, then certainly you can't use it as a kinyan chalipin. But that still doesn't tell us that if you're allowed to acquire a coin through a kinyan chalipin, that doesn't tell us what your position would be with regards to whether you can utilize a coin as the Sudar in the Kinyan Sudar. And that presents a problem in our Gemara, because the simplest reading of the Braita suggests that the Shulchani gave him copper coins, and he's returning him currency. And that means that the Shulchani gave him items that were commodities, and he's getting back in return from this individual coins. And that means what the Braita shows you, only thing that the Braita teaches you, is that Kesef is nikne derech chalipin, that you're allowed to acquire Kesef through chalipin. The Meshicha of the copper coins generated the kinyan on the silver coins, which are currency in the house. So now, for Rashi's Girsa, that the conclusion is, ein matbea nikne bechalipin, that is exactly what comes out of the Braita. But yet, that's not necessarily a question on Ula. And therefore, Rashi goes on to say that the Girsa was both, ein matbea nikne bechalipin, ve'ein matbea nase bechalipin. But the question is, where did Rashi get that from? You must be assuming that both sides of the Braita were dealing with money. And that's what we described in Rashi's explanation, that he thinks that both the Shulchani and the Bala Bayit are putting currency into this transaction. And even for the Bayit Tosafot, it's difficult, because even if you say that the conclusion from the Braita is simply that Kesef Nikneh B'Chalipin, that doesn't tell you about anything about whether Kesef Naseh Chalipin or Ein Naseh Chalipin, and why is it a question on Ula? And for both Rashi and Tosafot, you're going to have to explain that both sides of the transaction were dealing with currency. And that would explain why the Gemara's answer in a second will be that neither of the parties are dealing with currency, in order to stop you coming to either conclusion. Not the conclusion that matbea nase chalipin, and also not the conclusion that matbea nikne bichalipin. For Rashi, that's exactly what the question was, and this is coming to mind the question. And even for the Bali et Tosafot, who think the question is really only on Ula, nevertheless, they want to unmind the possibility of kesef nikne bichalipin because of the conclusion of the Gemara coming up, which seems to indicate that both don't work. Both Naseh Chalipin and Nikne B'Chalipin don't work. So now we have a bind here. We have all these Amoraim that say that Ein Matbea Naseh Chalipin. All of a sudden we have this Braita that seems to indicate otherwise. Ishtik, Ula had no answer. Amalei, Dilma Idi V'Idi B'Prutotot Shanu. Taleka Alayu Tiv'a. Says maybe both sides here are dealing with Prutotot. Rashi and both Tosafot say that Prutotot here is a copper coin without an image on it. It has not been minted. It's a slug, the equivalent of what we saw, according to Rashi, as an asimon in the Mishnah. And so maybe we're talking now about a commodity. And when you're speaking about a commodity, then there's no problem in terms of kinyan chalipin, because they don't have a shem tiva. They're not called currency. They're not called a minted coin in that case. Ve'idi ve'idi peruhavu. If that's the case, then they're both commodities. If they're both commodities, then a kinyan chalipin, mushimachi, niknu b'chalipin. That's why it works in a kinyan chalipin. So that would be a solution to the problem here, is to say that they weren't exchanging cash, money, but rather they were exchanging prutotot, amrlei, in. He says that makes a lot of sense. Ula says back, deganami, because there's a diuk out of the brighter that we brought, tektani, yafet dinar vitrisit. Because he says back to him, I'm going to give you back. Doesn't say I'm going to give you a dinar and a receipt. He says, I'm going to give you yafeh, the value of a dinar and receipt. Lotani dinar yafeh vit receipt. But he didn't say that I'm going to give you a dinar plus a receipt. Shma mina. So you see from here that the language of the Braita indicates that he's actually not giving him physical currency. He's saying, when I repay you, I'll pay you a value of a dinar and a receipt. But not that I'm going to physically give you a dinar and a receipt. There's a big difference between those. A dinar would be a dinar kesef. That would be currency. And that would seem to indicate that he was giving him currency. On the other hand, when it says, yafed dinar and a receipt, I'm going to give you the value of these prutotot that are worth a dinar and a receipt. Ravashi amar, dolam bidamim u biprutotot. It's like what we originally thought. The items in his house, when he says yafed dinar vitrisit, that means prutotot. But what he got originally was damim. What he got from the Shulchani was monies. Because if you look at the statement to the Shulchani, he says tenli dinar ma'ot. Makes it sound like he's giving him actual cash. So Ravashi says this was a transaction that involved cash on one side and prutotot on the other side. But it's still not a problem of halva'at, still not a problem of a loan. Even though then the transaction is not going to happen immediately, because there's no kinyan here. There's no kinyan. Why isn't there a problem of halva'at? The Gemara already is determined. If you can do a kinyan sudar, If you can do chalipin, then you would not have a problem of it being interest because you can generate a kinyan that puts it into the hands of the shulchani immediately. On the other hand, if you can't do it as a kinyan sudar, then it becomes a halva'ah because the shulchani doesn't get the money till later. Rav Ashi says, yeah, that's right. Nevertheless, it's not a problem, and this is what Fred had asked before. Kaven de'idle, since he has it in his possession now, naseh ke'omer, it's the equivalent of to what we're going to see in the Mishnah later on in the Masechta. Hilvani achi yavo b'ni, o achi imtza mafteach. Lend me the money until my son shows up and he brings me the money, he has the money on hand, or until I find the key to the area or the safety deposit box where I have my money, and I'll give it back to you. In that case, the Mishnah later on says, Shafilu halva'ah, even in the case of a halva'ah, if you have it, it's mutar latei lo'odeh. If you can give him more money, there it's not considered to be schar hamtana because of the fact that you have the money on hand. You're not really borrowing the money because the money you have to repay immediately. And so therefore there's no real schar hamtana. Again, it's a matter of convenience that he's doing this for you because you have money to repay right away. And since you have money ready to pay, you're not really borrowing the money because the money you have to repay it immediately. So therefore, we don't consider it to be schar hamtana, but rather a convenience fee, which is the fact that he's providing you liquidity until you can get access to the monies that you have stored away or that your son is bringing. And that matter of convenience you can pay for. So that you're allowed to do because it's not classified as schar hamtana. So in the end, Rav Ashi says that even if you'd say that the case is like we thought originally and it involves a money transaction, despite that fact, it's not called schar hamtana because of the fact that it's just a matter of liquidity because of the inaccessibility to the monies immediately. But that doesn't create a schar hamtana. That's not paying to delay the repayment because if he had access to it now, he'd pay you back right away. So he's not paying for the delay of repayment. He's paying simply for the convenience of getting the liquidity immediately.
Tosfot over here questions the source from the Mishnah later on in Bava Metzia because that Mishnah only permits sa'ah b'sa'ah. When you do equal transaction, if you have the sa'ah, your son's going to have it, it's in the storage house, we let you borrow the sa'ah now and return the sa'ah that is inaccessible to you now. But what it doesn't allow is you to borrow a sa'ah and give back a sa'atayim and give back double. So Tosafot says, where's the proof from here that you're allowed to borrow a dinar's worth and then give back a dinar and a trisit? Tosafot answers that the issue of sa'ah bisa'ah is an isur of ribit dirabanan, which is the possibility that the market price for the item might change, and therefore it might look like ribit, so therefore we don't allow it, and we give you a dispensation that if it's just an accessibility issue, that you can do it immediately. And Tosafot says from that, the Gemara parlays into the answer here. V'chachi kamar, kamosh mutar sa'ah bisa'ah derech halva'ah. If you do it in a method that is a loan, you're allowed to do it over equal amounts. Therefore, hachanami derech mekach u'memkar, if you do it in a transactional way, afilu sa'ah bisa'ayim, then even a sa'ah to two sa'ah, mutar. But Omer Achivo Bni would be mutar over here if it is just a problem of inaccessibility. Because as we described before, then it's a transaction, looks like a convenience fee, looks like you're exchanging the items. And the only restriction on that normally for Mekach and Memkar is because of the fact that it looks like ribit. The only restriction generally is Dirabanan because it's done in a transactional nature. So over here too, we'll waive the Din Dirabanan when it's done in a manner where it's just an inaccessibility issue for you. Then you'll be allowed to do it even Sa'a Bisa'atayim. And Tosafot makes it clear that that would only work if you say that the coins that he's returning are not the same coins that he's getting, because then it looks like a transaction. The Achronim argue about how literally to take Tosafot, whether Tosafot permits this even with coins or currency on both sides, as long as it's done in a transactional method, or this is only permitted when one side is damim, the other side are prutotot, which means that it's a commodity and a different item on the other side. The same would be true of two similar commodities. You'd have to differentiate them in order for it to be considered a transaction. Then it's permitted to have a sa'ah b'sa'atayim.
Tashma, kol ha'naseh damim be'acher, anything that is made into money based on something else, kevin shezach hazeh, once this person takes possession of it, nitchayev zeh b'chalipin, the other party becomes responsible or obligated in the chalipin. So now, kol ha'naseh damim be'acher, what does that mean that you're made into money based on something else? My nihu, what is that? Matbeya. That sounds like a coin. It's a Mishnah in Kiddushin. And the way we're explaining the Mishnah now is, these are objects that you would normally use to acquire value or to express the value of another object. That's what it means, Naseh Kedamim. The way that Rabbeinu Hananel says it over here is, Perish, Kol Davar, Shenaseh Damim, L'Chefetz. Anything that is considered to be money vis-a-vis the Chefetz, the commodity, Kagon, Dinar Kesef, Shenaseh Damim, L'Talit. Like silver coins that become the damim, the value or the monetary value of the talit. Kevin shekibel balad talit et dinar. Once the owner of the talit gets the dinar, zachabo, then the other individual owns the talit. Nitcheiv balad dinar batalit. Shekvar kana. He becomes responsible because he already bought it. Va'amda birshuto. And now it's in his possession. So what the Mishnah seems to indicate is that when you have objects that are nasid damim ba'acher, they are the means of valuation or the means of determining the value for other objects. What is that? That's money. That once you exchange money, then the object automatically goes into the possession of the other party. So if that's the case, shmamina matbeya nasid chalipin. That means that you're using the coin as the vehicle for the kinyan sudar. Now what's clear here is that you're not doing it through money, because we already saw in our Mishnah, ma'ot einan konot. Money is not a vehicle for acquisition. Whether you believe that is doraita like Rish Lakish, there is no ma'ot konot. Or even according to Rabbi Yochanan, who says ma'ot konot mi doraita mi drabanan, they took away or forfeited your ability to use ma'ot. So here when he simply pays the money, there's no kinyan on the talit. Yet, we're suggesting over here, when he pays the money, there is a kinyan. The only way to effectuate a kinyan here would be through a kinyan sudar or kinyan chalipin. That means that he's using the coin as a sudar, as a kinyan chalipin, and through that chalipin, he is now acquiring the talit. And so what you see here is that a coin can be used as a kinyan chalipin, otherwise how do you explain the Mishnah? The Tosafot says, how do you know that when the guy gives money, he's giving it as a kinyan chalipin and not as a kinyan damim? How do you know that he's not purchasing it with the money, but rather using the money as a barter or an exchange, where that is the sudar? So Tosafot at first suggests that he might have to articulate it and say that he's doing it as a kinyan chalipin, or Tosafot in the end says, inami afilu bistama. Kevin de machzir lo amatbeya kederech lachzir sudar kanu chalipin. So Tosafot says that if you don't articulate it, it might still work because the owner or the merchant gives you the money back, showing you that it's being used as a kinyan sudar. And so you may not have to articulate it. It might be that the mechanism of the kinyan shows you that it's a kinyan chalipin. Through the fact that the merchant gives him the cash back, that shows you that it's a kinyan sudar. That we'll see later on in the Gemara. It's machloket about whose sudar you use. Is it the sudar of the koner or the sudar of the makneh? And do you give the sudar back? So if you give the object back, then it's clear that you're using it as a kinyan chalipin. So if he was paying money to the merchant, and the merchant hands him the money back, it's clear that he's not buying it through a purchase, but rather through a kinyan chalipin. That's why he handed him the money back. But is he simply to hand him money, and then leave the money with him? You can't, oh yeah, it's a kinyan chalipin. No. Because then he just did something that looks like a purchase, is acting like a purchase, and it is a purchase in that case. So you have to either articulate, or there has to be something in the kinyan that's indicative of the fact that this is a kinyan sudar or a kinyan chalipin. Now, Tosafot says over here, if that's the case, this is what Yechiel asked before, what about the fact of nisrachu chitecha baliyah? If you use a kinyan sudar, then you're subject to that problem, which is that you have a situation in which the exchange doesn't happen physically. It happens in a representative manner, and that means that your object is now still with the seller. And that means if a fire comes out over there, he'll say, okay, sorry, I don't want to do anything. Sorry, it's not mine anymore. So Tosafot over here says, V'esh lemar, t'lo shchiach milto shikneh ma'ot derech chalipin. Since it's not a davar shchiach to use money as a kinyan sudar, because generally the seller would like to keep the money and not do it as a kinyan chalipin, so he would do it as a purchase. Therefore, Chazal were not goes there in that case. Because the Rabbanon are not gozer in that case where it's the low shchiach. Wait a minute, what about a regular kinyan sudar? Not a kinyan sudar through money, which is a commonplace kinyan, which was bothering you. How come you don't say nisruchu chitecha baliyah? Lekalamechash, Shema Yolomar, Nisrufuchi Techa Baliyah. They're not going to think that he's going to say Nisrufuchi Aliyah because came into Loki Bela Mocher Ma'ot. He has yet to get his money. Torach Umatzil. He goes to save it, Penny Sareva Lokeach Litenu Ma'ot. Because in the end, the buyer might not give him the money. Our real fear is that when the seller has the cash and the object is still in his possession and a fire breaks out, he says, you know what? I got paid already. It's your stuff over here. I'm going to let it go and burn. I have no interest in taking care of it. In a case where you use Kinya and Chalipin, you use the money as a sudar. Tosafot says it's an unusual case, so we're not going to worry about this. Nisrachu Tchitecha Baliyah. The last possibility is a regular Kinyan sudar, which, as Tosafot points out, is a very commonplace Kinyan. If that's the case, why don't we worry about Nisrachu Tchitecha Baliyah? The reason being is that in a Kinyan sudar, the seller never got paid. All they did was this representative Kinyan. The mocher, even though now the buyer is responsible for the chitim and it's his chitim, nevertheless, the seller has yet to get the cash in his hands. So if this fire breaks out, he's going to be much more careful about letting it just burn down. Because even though technically he's entitled under the law to say that it's yours and you still owe me the money, it's going to be much harder to force the buyer to come here and pay you when he didn't get anything. And so therefore, he has a vested interest in saving the object in order to make sure that he gets his cash in the end. So our only fear, our biggest fear, is where it's a commonplace kinyan, and the cash and the object is in the hands of the seller. Because then the seller is not really incentivized to do anything. In our case, where it's only a representative kinyan, then the seller is still incentivized to do something to ensure that he gets his cash in the end. And that's really why Tosafot says it's not a problem of Yisrfu Chitecha Ba'aliyah. So now, we have a problem here. Because based on the way we're reading the Mishnah in Kiddushin, it would seem that a Kinyan Chalipin does work with a coin. No, you explained the Mishnah incorrectly. Kol hanishom bidamim ba'acher. Anything that is assessed to value vis-a-vis another product, kevin shezach hazeh nitchayev zeh b'chalipin. So what Rav Yehuda in the end says is that the Mishnah is talking about a barter transaction. And what it means is not that kol hanaseh damim ba'acher, something that is the value that is assigned or assessed to the object or to the commodity, which would be money. Money is the way that you purchase or you assess it, and that's what you exchange it for. But rather, he says, kol hanishom bidamim. Anything that is, the value is assessed, but not that's the mechanism for the acquisition. As you see, Rashi is, kol shirigilim lishum otok shenim otam damim b'acher. Anything that you would assess its value when you are bartering it for something else. Dainu kol ha-mitaltalin. That is any object that is non-real property. There you would assign a price to it when you're doing the exchange. So even when you barter and you say, listen, I'm going to give you two chickens and you give me a goose. So that exchange, even though it's a barter exchange, what you're doing is you're saying, well, the two chickens are worth this. The goose is worth this. And therefore we're going to barter the exchange. That's how we offset it. And so that's what the kol hanishom bidamim means, any object where you give it or assign it a value in order to determine its barter price. And the way the Rabbeinu Chananel, you can see, says over here, kol hanishom hu perusho, kugon shebikesh liknot chamoro shel chavero bedinar. He wants to buy his friend's donkey for a dinar. Vishamlo parato bedinar. And then they assess the value of his para and say, oh, it's also worth a dinar. Masalo kitein shein lo chamoro bedamim alalu. And he gives him the cow in order to get the exchange of the donkey. Kevin shemashach balachamor et hapara. Once the donkey owner takes a kinyan on the para, zacha ba gam bala para et hachamor. Then the owner of the cow also gets the chamor, b'chol makom, shu mipnei shein kiperi. Peperi konim zedze. And since they are considered to be non-currency or commodities, those commodities can be acquired wherever they are. In essence, what they're saying is the Mishnah in Kiddushin is not speaking about a monetary purchase, but rather a barter transaction. And the way that they do that is by changing the understanding of what it means, kol ha'aseh damim ba'acher. What does it mean? Anything that is made into money by another object. So the way that we read it originally was that means cash. Cash is kol ha'aseh damim ba'acher. Cash is the item that you use to value or to purchase the commodity. And so therefore we thought we were talking about an exchange of money for an object or a commodity. In the end, Rabbi Yehuda says you're reading it wrong. Kol hanaseh damim ba'acher is really kol hanishom damim ba'acher. It means that anything that you assign a value to determine how to barter it, that is what we're speaking about in the Mishnah. What is that? That's mitaltalin. That's something where you assign a value to it to determine the exchange. And so therefore it becomes a barter transaction. If it's a barter transaction, then Kinyan Chalipin works. Not a Kinyan Sudar, but this is the classic case of Kinyan Chalipin, where if you acquire one of the objects, the other object automatically changes ownership to the other party. And that's how we explain the Mishnah in Kiddushin, and it won't present a problem for us of Kinyan Sudar or Kinyan Chalipin with cash. And this is a barter case, and therefore, when you make a kinyan on one, the other one automatically transfers ownership, but now we're not talking about a kinyan chalipin through a matbeya. Hakanami mistavro, that makes sense, vindiktoni, seifa. The seifa of that Mishnah says, ketzad, what's an example? Hichlif shor bipara, uchamor bishor. If you exchange a shor for a para, or you exchange a chamor for a shor, those are examples of a transaction. What happened to the cash over here? Where's the money? It's seeing that it's the examples brought in the Mishnah are a bartering example where you're exchanging two commodities or two objects. Shma mina, that's what's going on over here. It's a barter transaction, a chalipin transaction, not a purchase transaction or chalipin that is done through a coin. If you look in the top Tosvot, it says here, basar shor bipara. So Tosvot brings here a tirsa that we don't have in our Gemara. Our Gemara's Gemara is shor bipara and para bishor. Our Gersa is that way, because that's the way Rashi has the Gersa. And when Rashi had the Gersa, that's usually what ended up in the Gemara. But Tosfot says there was clearly another Gersa, and that Gersa was Echlif basar shor bipara. Rashi lo garsi basar shor. Says Rashi does not put in the Gersa of basar shor, and you can see that at the end of the Rashi, Echachi kamar perinami, shor bipara garsinan, the lo garsinan basar shor. Rashi makes it clear that Basar Shor is not the Girsa over here. And if that's Rashi's Girsa, that generally is what ended up in the Gemara. So what we have in the Gemara is Rashi's Girsa. Tosfot says that there was an alternate Girsa. He says, because Parachayim Mikrei Nami Peirei. Because for him, a live animal is considered to be Peirei. It's considered to be a commodity, merchandise. The way that Rashi's learning it is he believes that a live animal is considered to be a peirei, commodity. And this will have nafkaminot later on, which is that we're going to have a machloket in a second between Rav Nachman and Rav Sheshet, who argue about what is the vehicle by which you can do chalipin. Rav Nachman believes you can only do it through a kli, and Rav Sheshet believes you can even do it with peirei, you can even do it with other commodities, other items. And so what Rashi suggests over here is that the live animal is considered to be peirei. And since a live animal is considered to peirei, Rashi says the girsa could be paran shor, because they can be used as chalipin. They can be a kinyan chalipin, a transaction. What Tosafot says is that there is another view. And the other view is that live animals are not considered to be peirei, but rather a kli. They are considered to be a utensil. It says, v'nira, the shor of parach chayim have a kli chashuv, that a live animal is considered to be a kli. Because he uses them in order to carry his items, to plow with. We've spoken about this in Bava Kamma. It was the equivalent of their car. It is something that is a significant item, and therefore is deemed to be a kli. And so what Tosfot points out over here is, what is the mechanism of kinyan? Rashi wants it to be a peire over here, because in a second we're going to see that the Gemara is going to say, anichol Rav Sheshet. This works well according to Rav Sheshet that we're talking about items that are peirot over here. We're talking about items that would be classified as peirot. Rashi believes that live animals, like any other item, are considered to be commodities, and therefore they would fit into that definition. What the Balei Tosfot will point out is that the possibility that live animals are not considered to be peirot, but rather kli. Only in this case, in this unique circumstance when we're dealing with a kinyan chalipin, they have a din of a kli. In other circumstances, they're not going to be deemed to be a kli. But if you deem them to be a kli, then you can't say anichal Rav Sheshet, because this would work even according to Rav Nachman. And therefore, the alternate girsa was basar shor bipara, because basar shor, according to everyone, meat is not a kli, that is peri, that is clearly a commodity. And so why there's an alternate girsa is because they believe that live animals were kelim, and therefore that would even work according to Rav Nachman. The only way that you can claim that it's peire is to have it be basar shor in a para, not a shor in a para. Rashi fundamentally disagrees and says that a shor and a para are not classified as kelim. They're classified as peire, and therefore it works only according to Rav Sheshet. Their machloket might have to do with what's the meaning of a kli. The way that Rav Nachman explains to us a kli is based on na'al from root. We said before, davar shalem umitsuyam. One of the definitions which the Ravid brought back when we discussed this yesterday's daf is that it has duration or staying power. And so what Tosafot is seemingly saying is that animals are classified as kelim in this instance for this matters because they're items that stay around for a long time. They have duration to them. They are durable goods because they last a long time. And that's the definition of na'al, is a durable good. And so because it's a durable good, it has a classification of kli, and that's why they switched the gear set to basar shor and not to shor itself. That machloket about the girsa revolves about a more fundamental machloket as to whether shor and parag deemed as to be a kli or deemed to be peirot. And that'd be the machloket here between Rashi, Tosafot, and many other of the Rishonim who had this alternate girsa of basar shor. So now the Gemara says, Ulumai de salka data miikara, based on what you thought originally, that it's matbeya, then my ketzad. What are you doing with the ketzad? I mean, that's the question you just asked. Wait, if you think that the original explanation was talking about a coin, then what's the example the Mishnah is bringing that you exchanged a shor for a par and a par for a shor? It sounds like exactly like what the latter explanation is. Hachigamar. Upeire nami avdei chalipin. It's missing a little transition in the Mishnah, which is that if you use damim, it works. And also, peirot can do chalipin, ketzad. Echlip shor papara chamor bishor. So that's the way that you would explain it if you went by the original Havamina that was talking about money in that Mishnah. So there'd be a transitional phrase that says not only is money work, but also perot work. Hanichal Rav Sheshet, that works well according to Rav Sheshet, Amar Peri Avdei Chalipin, that you're allowed to do a Kinyan Chalipin not only with a Devar Mesuyam B'Shalem, but even with non-durable goods like fruits, vegetables, anything can be used as a Kinyan Sudar. Elo Rav Nachman, Amar Kli, in Aval Peirei Lo, he says you can only do it with a kli, which is a Devar Mesuyam B'Shalem, but not Peirei. Lo Avdei Chalipin, my Ketzad. Then what's the explanation in that Mishnah? What exactly is the Kinyan Sudar that is being done over there? Where's the kli? Hachikamar, Yesh Damim, Shehein Kichalipin. There are some times where there is value or monies that become like Chalipin, Ketzad. Hechlif Demei Shor Bipara. Oh, Dmei Chamor Bishor. According to the way that we explained it before, the Havamina would have been that we would have said there's a transitional phase that was missing. The way that Rav Nachman is going to explain it is, well, he can't say that because then it becomes that Peirei are using a Kinyan Sudar. And he doesn't allow for that. So now, what is he saying? Ketzad Yechliv Dmei Shor Biparau Dmei Chamor Bishor. That's not a barter exchange. The Havamina wasn't that it would be explained as Shor Bar and Par Shor, but rather, I'm going to pay you the value of a Chamor for your shore. I'm going to pay you the value of a shore for para, which basically means, right, which is money. And that's exactly what we wanted. The Havamina, we thought it was speaking about money. That would be the explanation. But what you see from here, Tosafot points this out, and he pointed out in yesterday's daf as well, is that it's clear that Rav Nachman must think that Kesef is a Kli, because otherwise it wouldn't work, because he still requires you use a Kli for a Kinyan Chalipin. And that's how Tosafot points out that the Machloket of Rav and Levi yesterday, whether Matbeya Naseh Chalipin or not Naseh Chalipin, is independent of the machloket between Rav Nachman and Rav Sheshet, which is that you can explain it according to either opinion. Even according to Rav Nachman, you can explain that Matbeya Naseh Chalipin because Matbeya has a din of a kli. And you see that over here, because that's how the Gemara answers over here. And Rav Sheshet could be the one who says that Ein Matbeya Naseh Chalipin, even if you believe that Peirot can work, over here the money has a different problem of the Tzura. And so he says that it must be that these machloket are independent. And the reason being, as Tosfot points out over here, is because Yesh Lamar, the Mistama lo yachlok Rav Nachman al Rav Levi. There's no way that Rav Nachman's going to argue on early Amoraim, like Rav and Levi, and say that they're wrong. So it's clear that Rav Nachman must be able to fit into both of their positions. And from that you see that Rav Nachman must believe that a coin has a status of a kli. And because it has a status of a kli, it could be utilized. But then you have a separate issue. Even if it has a status of a kli, maybe it can't be used because of the Tzura problem. And that's the machlokot over there, but that way you separate the two machlokot. So Gemara says, my time is the Rav Nachman. Then according to Rav Nachman, why does the Kinyan Chalipin work over here? If you want a paskin that ain't matbeya neseh chalipin, and the exchange according to Rav Nachman in the Mishnah is between money and another object, how does he explain the Mishnah? Savar laki Rav Yochanan. He holds like Rav Yochanan. Again, we're bringing in a lot of positions that are actually going to be discussed in tomorrow's daf. Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Shlokesh is machloket.
which Rabbi Yochanan Amar Davar Torah Ma'ot Konot. According to Rabbi Yochanan, Mina Torah, money is successful at creating the kinyan. Umipnei Ma'amru Mishicha Kona. And why did the Chachamim say that only Mishicha works and not monies? Gezerah Shem Yomar Lo Nitzrfu Chitecha Baliyah, which we've discussed over and over again. The problem that if we allow money to create the acquisition, there's a possibility that the buyer gives money or cash to the seller, and this merchandise is still in the hands of the seller, and yet he owns it now because of the money transaction. And then the seller will not be incentivized to take care of the product. So what we did was we allowed the buyer to reverse the transaction, and by his ability to reverse the transaction, the seller is then responsible for the item. He's not going to say, Nisru chitecha ba'aliyah, that your object burnt away, sorry, because the buyer can now back out of the transaction. And since he can back out of the transaction, the seller is incentivized to protect the merchandise, because otherwise the buyer is going to reverse the transaction, he's going to have to give the money back. So we say, until there's a kinyan mishicha, until he takes possession of it, the mocher is responsible for the item. Umilta de shchicha gazru be'rabbanan, and now, Rav Nachman's explanation is that when it's a commonplace occurrence, there the rabbanan would go there. Milta de lo shchicha, lo gazru be'rabbanan. Things that are more unusual, or are not your commonplace items, there, the Chachamim were not gozer. So a commonplace transaction is where you pay cash for the item. So in that case, the Chachamim said that the kinyan doesn't work. The money doesn't work as the kinyan. You need a kinyan mishicha because this problem, nisruchu chitecha baliyah. On the other hand, Rav Nachman's situation here, what's the circumstance of the situation? The answer is that it's demesh para b'shor or demesh shor b'para. And now Rashi explains the case. It's a little more complicated. The Havamina was that it was literally money for the shor, or money for the para, and we'd have explained it that way. But then the conclusion of the Gemara is that it's not talking about that, because ein matbea nesach halipin. If that's the case, then even according to Rav Nachman, you have to come up with a way by which the acquisition happens. And now we're saying it has to be a way that is not shchiach. So what's the answer? Rashi explains here. He says, amale alokeach para yeshli. The buyer says, I have a para. Shani notein lecha b'dmei shor. And I'm going to give you that for the value of the shor. So the seller sold him a shor. And they discussed between them the value of that. So the person acquired a shor for a certain amount of value. Yeah. The buyer comes back to him and says, instead of me paying you cash, I happen to have this nice para over here that I could give you instead of the cash. So what happened was that there was, in the interim stage, it was translated into cash. And after it was translated into cash, then he says, instead of doing it as a cash transaction, I want to give you a para to fill the cash. I'm going to give you in kind payment here, money equivalent. In the end, it becomes a barter transaction, but it's not really a barter transaction because there was a assessment of payment and value that would going through money. And then afterwards, they decide, instead of using money, they're going to use a para. And so in that case, Neotu Yachem Mikibelolav, Nitcheyen Bala Para, Latet Loeta Para, Vein Echad Mehem Yechol Akzor. Then it works. And that working works because Ma'ot are Konot. In both instances, the Kinyan went through money. In one case, he said to him, listen, I'm going to sell you the shor for the money. He made a Kinyan on the shor. Once he made a Kinyan on the shor, he's obligated to give the money. So now he owes him money. After owing him money, the buyer comes back and says, you know what, instead of me giving you money, I'm going to give you the para. The seller agrees. On the spot, you're done. The transaction's done. Why? Because that's a monetary transaction. Money for para. And ma'ot min ha-Torah work as a purchasing vehicle. But according to Rabbi Yochanan, who says that ma'ot work min ha-Torah, there's still gzeirah that it doesn't work. Mar says that's only in a case that it's shchiach. That's in a case when you go into a store, you hand him cash and you're trying to buy something. Or any case where you hand him cash and you're trying to buy something. Not in a case where the original transaction was a kinyan mishicha. He owes him money. Now in place or in lieu of paying him money, he's offering him up another object. So even though technically it's a cash transaction, nevertheless in the end, it's not the normal cash transaction because there was already a deal that created the monetary obligation. And now you're just replacing the monetary obligation with another object. And so therefore, it's not a kinyan sudar or kinyan chalipin, but rather a kinyan kesef. And kesef works min ha-Torah. And here, we're going to abide by the Torah rule, because this is an unusual case. It's this wild case where he already owed the money, and then he comes back to him after owing him the money and says, let me give you this instead for the money. That case is going to work.
And that's how we solve the problem for Rav Nachman to make it into a monetary acquisition rather than a kinyan chalipin. Therefore, it's not peyre that are doing the acquisition over here, but rather the money that's doing the acquisition. And it works even without chalipin, even without ein matbea naseh chalipin, because it's a cash transaction. And it works because min haTorah, cash works. And since this is an unusual case, then we're not gozer in that instance. And the way that the acquisition is being generated, as Tosfot points out over here, is with the forgiveness of the loan. He owes the money, and the transaction is being done by forgiveness of a loan. And therefore, Tosfot over here asks from the Gemara on Daf Vavam and Bet in Kiddushin, which says, I'm a kaddish b'milveh and a mikudeshet. If you try to transact or create a marriage through a milveh, it doesn't work. Why not? You can do it the same way that you do it over here. So Tosfot over here, as well as over there, points out, and this is a machloka that we discussed in Kiddushin, when you say, I'm a kaddish b'milveh and a mikudeshet, what does that mean? Does that mean that you can only not create the Kiddushin by saying, that loan that I gave you before, that money is this kesef Kiddushin. That fails. But if you were to do the Kiddushin through the forgiveness of the loan, that consideration would work and make it Kiddushin. Tosfot says, yes, over here, that works, just like it works in our Gemara. Forgiveness of the loan is considered to be consideration. And that can be the payment of money or the equivalent of payment of money. It works here to acquire as if it's a Kinyan Damim. And it works in Kiddushin also to generate the Kiddushin. And that's Tosfot the Shitato, that a Mekadesh Memilveh and a Mekudeshet is that you're trying to use the money that you already gave to her to create the Kiddushin. But for through the forgiveness of a loan, Rashi notes over there, that you can generate Kiddushin. There are Rishonim that believe even through the forgiveness of a loan, you cannot generate the Kiddushin since there's no physical or intangible item that is exchanged at that point. It's not sufficient consideration in order to generate the Kiddushin. That we discuss more heavily over there. The Gra over here brings that Aval data Rambam the apim milve koni, that even through the loan you can acquire it. Kamo b'maot la'inya mishapara, for the restriction of mishapara, that a forgiveness of the loan works the same way. V'kan to lo shchicha, it's only because over here there was an unusual case. Kani the gamre. Aval data Tosfot v'shar poskim after mishapara lo koni b'chol inyan b'milve, that a milve doesn't work at all. Whereas the Rambam believes that that is ma'ot konot like in any other circumstance. Therefore, if you use a milva in other cases, that would also work as a vehicle or mechanism acquisition, just like regular ma'ot. Since it's like regular ma'ot, you'd be subject to mishapara, like our Mishnah, where you're koneh through ma'ot. So the Rambam believes by kiddushin, you cannot use a milva to generate kiddushin. That's not only an outstanding loan that's there already, like the Balei HaTosafot say that you cannot utilize, but even through the forgiveness of a loan, you could not acquire or create the consideration for the Kiddushin. On the other hand, when it comes to a loan that is generated through Mecher, like our circumstance over here, which is a transaction generated the indebtedness, it wasn't the fact that you gave him money, but the fact that you gave him some object that he now owes you money for, the Balei Tosafot are consistent with their opinion and say that forgiveness of that loan can generate consideration for acquisition, but the loan itself cannot create that consideration. On the other hand, the Rambam believes, unlike by Kiddushin, where milve doesn't work no matter how you structure it, over here it works no matter what. Both through the forgiveness of the loan, you can generate consideration, and even if you use the milve itself as the acquisition vehicle, it also generates a kinyan, because over here, you can't say ma'ot lehotza'a nitna. The money was given in order to be spent. That's not the case. The indebtedness was incurred because of a transaction. And therefore, the Rambam believes that you can use even the original debt, of course, also the forgiveness of the debt, to acquire. And that's what the Gra is pointing out over here, that for the Rambam, this is a full-fledged acquisition through milveh, and therefore you'll be subject to mishapara, like in our Mishnah, whereas the Balei Tosafot say that a milveh does not generate a acquisition at all, elim ken, you use the forgiveness of the loan. So now the Gemara says, Ulare shlokish damar mishicha mifureshet min haTorah. According to Reish Lakish, who says, min haTorah, there is no kinyan damim. The only vehicle for a kinyan over here is a kinyan mishicha. Min haTorah, there is no kinyan ma'ot. Panicha yisavar laka Rav Sheshet. If he holds like Rav Sheshet, that a kinyan chalipin can be done not only with a kli, but even with peire, then mitaritz laka Rav Sheshet. He can explain the whole Mishnah and Kiddushin according to Rav Sheshet. At least savar laka Rav Nachman. If he holds like Rav Nachman that a kinyan chalipin can only be done with a kli, Damar peri lo avde chalipin and perot merchandise commodities cannot create a chalipin, umatzbeya lo kani. And according to Reish Lakish, a coin or money is not a vehicle for acquisition. Hey, chamitaritzla. How does he explain the Mishnah in Kiddushin? Because according to Rav Nachman, the only way to explain that Mishnah now is to say ma'ot konot, midoraita, which is the opposite opinion. That's Rabbi Yochanan who argues on Reish Lakish, where it says, al korcha k'rav sheshet mitaritzla. So therefore, in the end, you must conclude, Reish Lakish must hold like Rav Sheshet and cannot hold like Rav Nachman. If he holds like Rav Nachman, he's going to have no way to explain the Mishnah in Kiddushin. So this forces Reish Lakish to align himself with Rav Sheshet. Right, tonight, kol ha-metaltalim konim zeh zeh. All metaltalim, this is our Mishnah, that says that any merchandise or commodities can acquire each other. Vamar Reish Lakish, vafilu kis malei ma'ot, bekis malei ma'ot. Reish Lakish says that even a pouch full of money can acquire another pouch full of money. Whoa, that sounds like exactly like a kinyan chalipin that is being done with money. Targum ha-ravacha, Bedinar Anka Vanigra. Ravacha explains that it's talking about the monies that are in these pouches are not coins that are regular currency, but rather it's a dinar anka or a dinar anigra. And the Gemara explains, Echad shepesalto machut. One of them is a coin where the king had said it's no longer a valid currency. Echad shepesalto midina. And the other coin is a case where the people have refused to accept the coin. So usually what happens, and Rashi explains this over here, the case of the king is a melech gazar shelo yotziu. The king decreed that you no longer can use this coin. That usually comes because there's friction between two parties. Say you're in a large empire, and then you have different fiefdoms within the empire. So each of them, they mint their own coins, or they have their own coins for each area or each subsection. And now there's some friction between these areas, or frictions between the kings. So what ends up happening is that the king in this area says we're no longer going to accept the coins. So what Rashi points out is that when a king does that, the people abide by that in the public view. They're not going to violate the word of the king in public. But in private, behind closed doors, they're willing to transact with these coins because there's nothing wrong with the coins. They're willing to accept the coins. It's just that there is some sort of political altercation that's going on. And so the king refuses to have those coins be used in his kingdom. But other than that, they're valid coinage. So what happens in that case is that in public people won't use them, but in private they will use them. On the other hand, the case where the king is willing to accept it, but the Bnei Medina don't like those other people, or they don't like the coin. They feel that the coins don't have the proper value embedded in them, or the inherent value. They think that their silver mix or their gold mix in the coins is diluted, and therefore they don't want to accept them. The lack of acceptance is not because the coins aren't valid currency. It's just that they feel over here that that currency is not worth what its face value is showing, and therefore they're unwilling to accept it. The king has nothing or no issue with it. So, but people will not use it in this area because they believe that it's diluted. You go to another area, people accept them freely because that's the coinage of the currency of the other area. So the reason they're not accepted here is because the people refuse to accept them. But not that there's anything fundamentally wrong with the currency. And other, you go to the next neighborhood, they would use them because they accept them as coinage. And that's what the Gemara says over here. Betzricha, you need both of them. Diashminim psalto machot. If it was only that the king had taken out of circulation, mishum delo sagi klau, because it's not allowed to be used at all in this area. Aval psalto medina, where the people don't accept it, to sagile medina achid rite, where it can be utilized in the other areas, emakati matbehu. Maybe it's still considered to be currency. And it wouldn't work here because you have a kinyan chalipin. If you're only talking about the case where the people refuse to accept it, mishom, that coin is not accepted at all. People in this area will not accept that coin, not in public, not in private, because they don't believe that it is a valid currency. But when the king decrees not to use it for political reasons, people will accept it behind closed doors and in private. So, ema kati matbeu, maybe it's still classified as a coin. Vein matbeu, nikne bechalipim, tzricha. That's why you need both of them. So what in the end, the explanation of Reish Lakish's statement is that the coins that are being exchanged here are coins that are deemed to be commodities and not currency. The reason they're deemed to be commodities is because they've been taken out of circulation. In one case, by the king's decree, and in one case, by the unwillingness of the people to accept them as currency in this location. And what the chiddush is that both of those are classified as commodities and not currency, even though you can make an argument that one of them is currency and one of them is a commodity for the reasons that we explained over here. Nevertheless, the Chiddush, and that's what Reish Lakish is pointing out, is that they're both deemed to be a commodity and not a currency. So now the Rabbeinu Chananel here says, V'kaimalon k'Rav Nachman. We pass on like Rav Nachman, the peri lo avdei chalipin. That peri can't do chalipin, that chalipin can only be done through a kli. V'shinuye d'shani shinuyehi. And the conclusion that the Gemara came to here is a good conclusion. And the explanation of the Mishnah follows the position of Rav Nachman or works with Rav Nachman, and therefore the Halacha is like Rav Nachman. So the Rabbeinu Chananel over here paskins like Rav Nachman that Peirei cannot be utilized as Chalipin, only a Kli can be used for Chalipin. This is what generates the problem that Tosfot had with Rashi's explanation of the Girsa before, which is that Kasha the Rashi, the Pasach the Kaman for Reish Lakish. Because he paskins later on like Reish Lakish. So now, he paskins like Reish Lakish that Ma'ot min HaTorah are not Konot. Min HaTorah, there's only one Kinyan, that's a Kinyan Mishicha. If you combine those two positions, you run into a problem. Rashi is paskining like Reish Lakish, and he's paskining like Rav Nachman. We in the Gemara here concluded that Reish Lakish can only explain the Mishnah according to Rav Sheshet, and not according to Rav Nachman. So now you have a problem. You have a two piskei halacha that if you combine them, you have no way to explain the Mishnah in Kiddushin. And so that's why Tosafot over here says that Rashi's explanation is very difficult, because if you believe that a animal is considered to be peret and not kli, then there's no way to fit Rav Nachman into that Mishnah in Kiddushin. If you have the girsa here be basar shor and para, then you have a way to deal with it. Because if it's basar shor and para, then you could argue that a live animal would be considered a kli. And that's the way that you could have solved the problem. And then Tosfot brings, Miu, the Perush Rabbeinu Tam. According to the explanation of Rabbeinu Tam, the Chalipin Sheve B'Sheve Kani, the Kuliyama, Feli Peri, Atur Shapir Breitah D'Bisamuch. Then it all works out nicely. Rabbeinu Tam has a Chiddush, or a Shita here, that the Machloket of Rav Sheshet and Rav Nachman only revolves around a Kinyan Sudar, around a representative Kinyan. When you use an item as a representative kinyan, Rav Nachman said it must be a kli. Sheshet says it can even be peir, it can even be any commodity. What the Rabbeinu Tam says is that's only, their machloket revolves around when you're using a representative kinyan. When you actually do a barter transaction, over there, a kinyan chalipin works, even according to Rav Nachman, with peir. That's what Rabbeinu Tam claims. Rabbeinu Tam claims that their machloket about what can be used in a kinyan chalipin is different in a regular Kinyan Chalipin. That's what I said to you before. There's a difference between a Kinyan Chalipin, which involves bartering objects, and a Kinyan Chalipin, which is known as a Kinyan Sudar, which is a subset of Kinyan Chalipin, where you're using a representative item. What the Rabbeinu Tam says, the Machloket of Nachman and Sheshet is solely about a Kinyan Sudar, not about a Kinyan Chalipin. If you say that, then you have a solution to the whole problem here, which is you can paskin like Reish Lakish, you can paskin like Rav Nachman, and then you could still explain the Mishnah in Kiddushin as being a barter transaction. Because even Rav Nachman agrees that you can barter objects for each other, and that's not subject to Rav Nachman's position that peri don't work. Then you run into a bigger problem, is then why did our Gemara over here say that you're unable to explain the Mishnah in Kiddushin according to Rav Nachman's position? Why is it that the Gemara concluded that Reish Lakish cannot hold like Rav Nachman, he must hold like Rav Sheshet? The way we're explaining it now, you could have Reish Lakish hold like Rav Nachman. And so Tosfot says over here, Peirush Rabbeinu Luklei b'chalipin shaveh b'shaveh, v'yesh lamar, d'dumia d'reisha, kol nishom d'mayri b'chalipin kli b'kli. Because the reisha seems to be indicating that we're talking about a kli for a kli, because it's kol naseh, d'mayri b'inan shaveh b'shaveh, where it's not an equal barter transaction. V'wad din ha-seifa d'ichlif shor b'parah mayri b'inam shaveh. So Tosfot says that the Mishnah itself seems to indicate that we're not talking about a barter transaction, but talking about a representative kinyan because of the fact that the objects are not equal. And that's because why would you have to assess the value of the object in order to trade it? The only reason you have to assess the value of the object is because they're not equal in value. And therefore you have to figure out how to equalize the value in the transaction. Once you're doing that, it's clear that the transaction is working on a representative kinyan and not a physical kinyan between the bartering parties. And so for that reason, the Gemara rejects explaining it as a barter transaction, which would then allow Reish Lakish to hold like Rav Nachman, because the Lashon HaMishnah does not seem to support that. And so in the end, the Tosfot says that even if you hold the Rabbeinu Tam, you still can't explain that Mishnah in that manner, but can paskin the halacha, like what Rashi suggested, which is you can paskin the halacha like Reish Lakish and like Rav Nachman, and still be able to explain how you have a kinyan in those circumstances of being a barter transaction. Okay, we're going to stop over here by the last line on Memvav Amud Bet.